Okay, we're beginning the third parak today on the top of Chav Tet Amud Aleph. The parak deals with the two major issues, two parshiot that are found in Chumash, one in Parshat Mishpatim, Per Chavet, Pasuk Tet Vav, which is V'chi Yifatei Ish Betula, Asher Lo Orasa, V'shechav Imah, Mahor Yimharena Lo Liisha. Person seduces a young girl who is a Betula. She is not engaged halachlet. She doesn't have Kiddushin or Erusin. And he sleeps with her. Mahor yimarenu lo liisha. But he rushed her to be his wife. Imma'in yimma'in avia letitalo. If the father refuses to give the daughter over to this individual. Bekesef ishkol kemora habitulot. Then he will pay him kemora habitulot. Again, terminologies that are not well defined. We've spoken about the issue of mohar habitulot before with regards to whether ketubah is derabanan or deoraita. That's one parsha that we find in Parshat Mishpatim, again, with the seduction of a bitula. There's another parsha in Parshat Kiteitse, wherein Perek Chafet, Pasuk Chafet, Ki imtza ish na'ara bitula, asher lo orasa, utfasa, v'shachav ima v'nimtzau. The person finds a na'ara bitula that he rapes, and he sleeps with her, and then it's found out. V'natana ish, ashochev ima la'avi ha'na'ara, Chamishim Kosef, the individual who sleeps well will give to the father of the Na'ara 50 Kesef, silver. She will be for him a wife because he afflicted her. He cannot send her away his entire life. As we're going to see later in today's daf, the Gemara sees a Gzeirah Shavah between these two parshiot, and therefore we throw out items from one parsha to the other. It is known here as what's called Knas. These are fines that are levied on the individual who acts in this manner. That's whether the individual raped or the individual seduced. In both cases, and there's a difference, we'll see those differences later on, but there is a fine that is levied on the individual. That fine is associated with a bitula, and we're going to determine or figure out which bitula is covered by that knas. That's number one. Number two is, the Gzeir Shava also brings together the two parshiot to tell us what that penalty is, or what that knas is. Over here, by the case of rape, it says 50 kosef, it says 50 silver, and it doesn't tell you what coinage, or what size of coin we're dealing with, whereas by mifateh, in the Parshat Mishpatim, it says, ishkol kemora betulot. Ishkol, from the word shekel, it's a verb for shekel, so there the Gemara learns out, shekel kesef is the monies that are used. The 50 shekel kesef is the knas that we're speaking about. So the Mishnah here is going to discuss who is entitled to this knas. And that is, Elu ne'arot sheyesh lehem knas. These are the young girls who are entitled to knas if these acts are perpetrated with them. Habala mamzeret, vala netina, vala kutit. Someone who rapes a mamzeret, a netina, and a kutit. Habal Gyoret, Bela Shvuya, Bala Shivcha, Shinifdu, Vishinit Gairu, Vinishtacharu, Pachot Mibnot, Shloshanim Vyomechad. We've discussed this before, we've had these in the Mishnayot before. This is a convert, someone who was in captivity, or a Shivcha, each of these individuals where the Shvuya, the captive, was redeemed, the Gyoret converted, or the Shivcha was freed. If then all took place, less than 3 years in one day, where we've seen before that Chazal tell us that bitulim are not affected before that time, and therefore the girl will definitely be a bitula, she's not affected by whatever these issues bring up, then in these cases she's entitled to the knas. Abala choto, someone who perpetrates this crime with his sister, bala chot aviv, or his aunt, bala chot imo, or his aunt from his mother's side, Valachot Ishto, or his sister-in-law, Val Eshet Achiv, or his brother's wife, Val Eshet Ache Aviv, or his aunt through marriage, his aunt who's married to his uncle through the father, Val Nida, or on a woman who is a Nida, Yesh Lahem Knas. They do have Knas. Afal Bi Shehem Bihi Karet, even though all of these that we just listed here have a Chiyuv Karet, if a person does have Bia with them, nevertheless, ein behem mitat beitin. They're not subject to one of the four death penalties ayidei beitin, and because of that, they're still entitled to knas. We'll get to that later on in the perek, not in today's daf, but the concept of commonly derabimine. When someone is given a severe punishment, that absolves them of the other possible punishments that are there. In this case, the Mishnah says that karet does not have that power. Even though it's a severe punishment, it does not have the power to eliminate or absolve from other punishments. There is a shita that we'll see later on from the Chunin Akana that believes that even karet is strong enough to override the necessity for paying knas. But our Mishnah clearly does not believe that. You have three categories of women that are listed here. The last part of the list is very clear. It's a grouping of women who are asurin, people that you're not allowed to get married to. There's an isur in getting married to them. But the isur is an isur karet. And that's the common denominator between all these women, that there is an isur karet associated with them. And that's why the Mishnah lists them here as individuals who still get knas, because karet is not strong enough to override the knas. Now, in each of these cases, you have to come up with a scenario in which you're only chayav karet and not amitad beitin. And that's as Rashi explains over here, Eshet Achei Aviv, as well as Eshet Achiv, Shinit Kadshalo Leachiv, Vigirsha, and he divorced her. All these cases are cases where there was Kiddushin, and then a divorce. You can't have Nisuin, because once you cross over the threshold of Nisuin, even if there was never any B on that marriage, she's no longer believed to be a Bitula. We saw that earlier in Ketubot, that she's not entitled by default to a Ketubat Bitula. The assumption is that a woman who's married is not a Bitula, unless we have evidence to the contrary. So if she was married, even though she technically is still a bitula, she does not have the status of a bitula. So the cases here are all cases of kiddushin and then divorce. Kiddushin and divorce, because in that case you had a marriage that makes them asurim, but a marriage that didn't reach the point of nisuin, of consummation, and therefore she's still a bitula. The one case which is a little bit questionable is the case of Eshet Achiv. In the case of Eshet Achiv, the Gemara in Yerushalmi poses the question slightly differently and says, well, Eshet Achiv, what do you mean? The wife of his brother, if his brother died, he has a mitzvah to marry her. There's no restriction, and we know that Yibo implies even min ha'irusin, not just from the Nisuin. So the Gemara in Yerushalmi answers slightly differently and says it's a case where the brother already had children from another wife. And therefore, there's no need here for Yibo, and that's why there's an Isur Karet. On the other hand, Rashi just gives a simpler case. It's a case where there was a divorce. In a case of divorce, there's no chiyuv of yibum, but there's still a restriction of eshet achiv. So in these cases, that's how we get to the scenario in which these individuals are chayav karet and not a chiyuv mitat beitin. In instances where had they remained married, then there would have been an iser mitat beitin for some of these, or there would have been a possibility of yibum or other issues. Gerushin, divorce, stops all of that and leaves it at a chiyuv karet. And that's what we have here, kiddushin and then gerushin in these instances. The grouping before that are the three women we've mentioned before, three women who are suspect in being bitulot. There's a question as to whether they are bitulot. That's the gyorit, the shvuya, and the shifcha. All of these individuals have issues that make us believe that they are not bitulot or they cannot be assumed to be bitulot by default. But in this instance, it was less than 3 years and 1 day when all this transpired. And therefore, they do retain the status of bitulot because all of the problematic behavior or issues took place prior to the time that bitulim matter. The first list are a list of individuals who are asurot in terms of marriage. You're not allowed to marry the first three individuals here, which is a mamzeret, an itina, and a kutit. Since you're not allowed to marry them, you would have thought maybe there is no knas over here. So now, who are these women? Mamzeret is very clear. And a mamzeret is a surah lavol bakal. And marriage to that mamzeret is an improper marriage. Nevertheless, she's still entitled to the knas, and we'll see why. The nitina, Rashi claims over here, the reason by nitina is because there's only an isur dirabanan to marry a nitina. The rabbanan means David gazar alehem. David was gozer that you may not marry the nitinim anymore. And that was based on the original Takanat Yoshua that made them into Avadim. And therefore, they are Nitinim that are only Nitinim, only Asurim Midrabanan. So their Knas is Deoraita. There's an Isur Derabanan. And then the Knas still exists because Minat Torah, they have a classification of Bitulot. Tosafot takes issue with Rashi's explanation over here. And he says that that's not the explanation, because what Rashi is suggesting is that once the Rabbanan, or once David HaMelech was Gozer Alehem, that changed their status from being a regular Kal Yisrael into an Eved or a Shivcha. And since David was gozer that they be Avadim and Shvachot, they're now governed by the rules of Avadim and Shvachot. And so the reason you would have believed over here that they don't get Knas is because she is a Shivcha. The only problem with that explanation is that a Shivcha is not entitled to Knas. Shivcha does not get Knas, and we'll see that later on in the Gemara. So Tosafot says that cannot be the explanation for the problem that we have over here. And therefore, what is the Iser of Netina? That the Iser of Netina is that they are Surim because they are Kena'anim. We know that the Netinim lied in the time of Yoshua and convert. We have a restriction of Lo Titchatein Bam. You may not marry them. If you remember in the Gemara in Yivavot, I think on Daft Ayin Vavam and Aleph, over there Rova has a drosha where he says that Afilu Bigeyutan. That means that even after they convert, there still is a restriction with regards to the seven nations with a marriage with one of those people. So before conversion, clearly there's an Isur. After conversion for the seven nations, there still is an Isur to marry them, even if they've converted to be Jews. And so over here in the Netinim, even though they converted to be Jews, because they were Kena'anim originally, there's still a restriction of Lo Titchateim Bam. So Tosfot says, if he's right, then what was the Gezerah of David? What did David or Yoshua add in their Gezerah of the Netinim? So the answer might be there that they made it clear they didn't want them to mix with Klal Yisrael. Here they were converts. Here they were Jews already. But there was still an Isur of Lo Titchateim Bam. How do I ensure that we don't mix with them? I make them into Avadim and Shvachot. It was gozer on them to make it clear that there's a delineation between them. That does lead some of the Rishonim to believe that the Isur of Lo Titchateim Bam only applied to the first generation of Netinim. But the subsequent generations of Netinim were not governed by Lo Titchateim Bam. And that's what the Gzeirah of David did, which was it made the subsequent generations into Avadim and Shvachot, similar to Rashi's position. They come up with a middle position which balances between Tosafot and Rashi, saying that in the beginning it's like Tosafot, and later on for the children it was like Rashi. But anyway, we have to come up with the reason why the Netinot over here are Asurot. So according to Rashi, either it's an Isur Derabanan, I mean a very early Isur Derabanan, or the Isur Derabanan generates a problem of Eved and Shivcha, or according to the Tosafot, Netina is a problem of Lo Titchateim Bam. Because even after they convert, there's still an Isur of Lo Titchateim Bam, which Rava mentions in Yevamot, Daf, Ayin, Vavam, and Aleph, that even after they convert, the seven nations still have a restriction of Lo Titchateim Bam, and that is what the Isur is that's being valid over here. The next one, which is a Kutit, what's the restriction against marrying a Kutit? Rashi says over here, Kutit, Kasavar Geire Arayot Hein. Rashi says that the belief here is that they did not convert properly. There's a Machloket Tanaim, which discusses whether the Kutim actually converted properly or did not convert properly. The story in Sefer Melachim says they converted because they were afraid of the lions. The question is, did they do any more than that? Did they ever convert fully after they were afraid of the lions? That is a machloket tanaim. Even according to the Tana, who says, Rabbi Meir, who says they were gerei emet, later on we find that their practices deviate so much from Klal Yisrael and they start worshipping Avodah Zarah. And then there's another question as about what their halachic status is. Even if they were Geri Emet, do we lose that or has something changed with regards to their halachic status that's independent of whether they were Geri Ayot or Geri Emet? How do we deal with them today? Rashi claims the Kutit that is the problem in the Mishnah is a Kutit that was Geri Arayot. They never converted. Well, they never converted. The Isser here is Lo Titchatein Bam, that you should not marry them. Now again, Tosafot takes issue with that. Because if you explain that it's Kutei Geri Ariotein, then you have a case here where you have an Oved Kochavim and Ovedet Kochavim, a non-Jew. Non-Jews are not entitled to Knas. According to Tosfot in the previous case with Netina, she was Asur of Lo Titchateim Bam after the Gerut, after she converted. Over here, Rashi is having an Isur before they convert. It means that they're not Jewish. They're not Jewish. They're not entitled to Knas. We saw earlier in the Gemara in Ketubot that the Gemara is unwilling to grant a Knas to certain women because they're going to either go back to being a Nachriya or they're not going to be or continue to be Jewish. Why would we give them a Knas to go spend that money as a Goya? We want to grant them a Ketubah. We want to grant them the monies when they're going to remain Jewish. So over here, if Lo Titchateim Bam is an Isur, a restriction against marrying them, then why would we grant them a Knas? Tosafot says that the reason that we do that is because we don't want Ein Chote Niskar. We don't want to have the person who sins be benefit from the fact that he sinned. The fact that we're not going to give her a kenas will only benefit the party who raped her. The fact that the party that raped her now is going to get away without having to pay any penalty. And therefore we force them to pay the penalty, even though technically they're not, quote-unquote, a part of Klal Yisrael, still under the law of Lotit Chatein Bum. And that also makes it the authorship of this Mishnah is not Rabbi Meir, who believes that they are Gerei Emet. That's problematic, because we're going to see in the Gemara that Rabbi Meir is the author of our Mishnah, even though he can't be the author of the entire Mishnah, he's at least an author of the first section of the Mishnah. So Tosafot offers an alternative that the problem here is not a problem of Lotit Chatein Bam, but it's even according to the one who says Gerei Emetim. Even according to the one who says that they were full converts. Im Tomar, Im Kain, my Kamash Malon. Then what's the question here? Pshita Deish Lakanas, Israel Kimurahi. If you believe they're Gerei Emet, that means that they're full-fledged Israelite. Why shouldn't she be entitled to a kenas? They thought maybe we won't give them a kenas because we're trying to prevent Jews from mixing with the kutim. Again, the Chazal did not want marriages between Bnei Israel and the kutim, even if they were Gerei Emet, because there were still problems with their practices, and they did not accept fully all the practices of the mitzvot. And because of that, they wanted to maintain a certain amount of distance or separation. So how would they do that? By treating them somewhat like an Ovedet Kochavim. Just like an Ovedet Kochavim is not entitled to Knas, if we treat the Kutit that way, people will understand that there's a difference or a segregation between them. So that's why we have these three lists over here. Again, the first three are people who are Asurim to marry. The second three are people who have questions about their Bitulin. And the last list is issues or marriages which involve a chiyuv karet. Those are the three groupings, and the Mishnah says all of them get knas. Gemara says, Hani ne'arot sulot itluhu knas sheirot lo. From the Mishnah, it sounds like only these problematic marriages or women are entitled to a knas. But if the woman was a perfectly good Israelite who was a bitula, she wouldn't be entitled to a knas. Where is she listed in the Mishnah? Hachikamar. Elu narot psulot, sheyesh lahen knas. Now, the Mishnah here is not coming to address who gets a knas. It's trying to say these are the narot who are psulot. These are problematic women who still are entitled to knas. Abal mamzer ben tinava kutit. So the Mishnah doesn't really begin elu narot, meaning in general, these are the narot entitled to knas, but rather, elu narot psulot. Of course, a narak sheira is entitled to knas. That you don't need to tell me. The Mishnah is coming to tell you which narot psulot are still entitled to a knas, and that's the chiddush of the Mishnah. Then Gemara says, nara in, ktana lo. From our Mishnah, we are middayek, that a nara is entitled to knas, but a ketana is not entitled to knas. Mantano, who's then the author of our Mishnah? I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Rabbi Meir. It must be Rabbi Meir, that's what I mentioned before, that Rabbi Meir is the author of our Mishnah, so that's why Tosfot wants to have it that the Kutim could even explain, according to Rabbi Meir's Shita, which is that they are Gerei Emet, because he's the author of this part of the Mishnah, which is Rabbi Meir believes the Tanya. Tanami bat yom echad, bat shetavi shtei sarot, yesh la mechar, vein la knas. A young girl, from the time that she's born until the time she reaches puberty, she has a din of mechar, her father can sell her as an amaha ivriya, vein la knas, and she's not entitled to knas of a bitula. Mishtavish de sarot, once she reaches the age of puberty, vajti bager, till she becomes a bogeret, that is the 6 months after she reaches puberty, 12 to 12 and a half, yesh la knas, vein la mecher. She is entitled to a knas then, but her father can no longer sell her as an ama ivriya, divrei Rabbi Meir. Sheya Rabbi Meir Omer, because Rabbi Meir's principle is, kol makom sheyesh mecher, anytime the father's entitled to sell her, ain't knas. She's not entitled to the knas of the Anusa and Mifuta. V'chol makom sheyesh knas. Anytime she's entitled to knas, that's from 12 to 12 and a half, ein mefer. There is no sale. Ama Ivriya is the parsha at the beginning of Parshat Mishpatim. And over there it says that a father has the entitlement to sell his daughter as an Ama Ivriya. And one of the ways that she goes free is when she comes of age, when she reaches puberty. So if she was already sold, she would go free when she reaches the age of puberty, then certainly her father can't sell her after that age. Because if she was already on Mivra, she would have been freed. Kal v'chomer that he can't sell her at that point. So Rabbi Meir's Shita is very clear. Mecher and Kenas never overlap. On the other hand, Chachamim Omrim, Ktana Mibat Shloshanim V'Yom Echad, Vajtibager yesh lakanas. A young girl from 3 years and one day until she reaches the bagrut, until she reaches 12 and a half, yesh lakanas. She gets a kanas. Now, why it uses 3 years and one day is because there's no din of betulim until after that point. As far as mecher is concerned, it's from day one, like Rabbi Meir said. From the day that she's born, he can sell her as a amayivriya. But because of the kanas issue, kanas issue only starts from 3 years and one day. That kanas will apply from then all the way till the age of 12 and a half. That means for the chachamim, there's an overlap between, seemingly an overlap between kanas and mecher while she is a ktana. From 3 years and one day until she reaches the age of puberty, there will be an overlap between them. But the Gemara says, yesh la kanas, kanas in mecher lo. What do you mean? She's entitled to a kanas, but the father can't sell her. That doesn't make so much sense. Ema af kanas b'makom mecher. That the kanas also applies even when there is mecher. Mecher, everybody agrees, terminates at puberty and starts from one. Again, for bitulah, it only starts from 3 years and one day. So it's not relevant below that point. But that means anytime you have mecher, there's also kanas, according to the chachamim. Now the kanas will extend beyond that because it'll go to 12 and a half. Even though Mecher will end at 12. This is a Mishnah later on Daf Mem. That Mishnah describes this machlok between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. From our Mishnah, it seems that Ne'ara means Ne'ara, not Kitana, Ne'ara, not Bogeret. Tosafot, there are many Rishonim ask over here, how do you know that our Mishnah excludes a Kitana? Maybe the Mishnah writes Ne'ara to exclude a Bogeret, to exclude someone over 12 and a half, but not necessarily to exclude a Kitana. How do you know the Mishnah really believes that a Ketana is excluded and the Mishnah here is like Rabbi Meir? So Tosafot says that you can't learn that out from our Mishnah. The truth is, our Mishnah would not tell you that information. That's really gleaned from the Mishnah on Daf Mem. The Mishnah on Daf Mem, which describes the machlok between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir, makes it clear that Rabbi Meir is the Stam position and that our Mishnah is following Rabbi Meir. So Tosafot says, from our Mishnah itself, you could not prove anything about Ketana, but because of the Mishnah later on, which brings Rabbi Meir's opinion, that's why we believe Rabbi Meir is the author of all of the Mishnayot here. And because Rabbi Meir is the author of Mishnayot, then Ketana must have been excluded from Ne'ara. That's the way Tosafot learns it. Tosafot says that the proof is not from the word Ne'ara over here, especially since we reinterpret the word Ne'ara to mean Narot Psulot, and not to mean Ne'ara in the traditional sense. And therefore, we learn it out from the latter Mishnayot. Other Rishonim suggest that the usage of the word Ne'ara instead of Bitulot, or instead of other words, is what drives the Gemara to say there's a diuk over here. The Gemara could have picked a different word. The fact that it picked Ne'ara specifically, like Shaul is suggesting, maybe Ne'ara itself gives off that meaning because you had other choices. Had you wanted to include Ketana, you could have said Bitulot, because a Bogeret is not necessarily a Bitul anymore. We know that her Bitulim diminished. So maybe Elu Bitulot would have included even a Ne'ara and Ketana, or other options that the Rishonim give, and therefore Ne'ara is very particular and very specific, and that's how the Gemara is Midayek. Now, even though, in general, Tosafot has this position in Shas, that anytime the Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir, the Gemara doesn't say Mantana. Who's the author of the Mishnah? Because Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. So why does the Gemara over here say Mantana if they know that the author of the Mishnah is Rabbi Meir? So it might be because of what we're going to see later on, that the entire Mishnah cannot be authored like Rabbi Meir. Because there are parts of this Mishnah that don't follow the position of Rabbi Meir, and that's why the Gemara is asking Mantano. Because there are clearly parts that are not Rabbi Meir's Shita. According to Rashi, the Kutit is not even Rabbi Meir's Shita. According to Tosafot, at least he reconciles that, but later on we're going to see some of the problems that arise here, that Rabbi Meir cannot be the author of the entire Mishnah, and that's why the Gemara over here says Mantano, even though the author is Rabbi Meir in the end, and Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. All right, now, the Gemara continues and says, V'hane b'nei k'nasa ninu? What if these individuals are really b'nei k'nasa? Now, Rashi says over here that this is a new question, meaning that the question is on our Mishnah. Are these individuals who are in the Mishnah, are they really entitled to k'nas? Now, there is a vav chibur over here, and the vav chibur would seem to indicate that it's connected somehow to the previous issue. But Rashi says it's a completely independent issue. There are those that wanted to connect it somehow to the previous issue and say these are entitled to kenas mina Torah. They're not entitled to kenas just mi drabanan, because just now we were talking about kenas mi doraita. That's machlok between Chachamim and Rabbi Meir, is kenas doraita. So the V is v'hani b'nei kenasa ninu. The people in our Mishnah are really entitled to kenas even mina Torah, not just mi drabanan. How is that possible? V'amai. How could you say that? Ikrei kan, the Torah demands, v'lo tiyeli isha. That the woman be for him a wife. Isha ha-re'uya lo. It has to be a wife who's appropriate for him. Now, simply by the pasuk itself, it wouldn't necessarily have excluded these women, because lo tiyah le'isha means that she should be a for a wife for him. It's possible, the Gemara entertains this, that it's an asay. An asay with docha de lota asay of not marrying these women, and maybe it would say she has to marry these women, even so. The real problem here is the drashat chazal, which says isha ruya lo, has to be a woman who is appropriate for him. Well, if it's a woman who's appropriate for him, none of these women are appropriate for him. Amar Reish Lakish, ne'ara, ne'ara, ha-ne'ara. That we have extraneous words here that help us with the drasha. Girsa in our Gemara follows the girsa of Rashi. Rashi believes here that the extraneous word is ne'ara, ha-ne'ara. And that is by the Parsha of Ones, Parsha Titeitse. It says, Pimtza ish. Nara bitula, that's one nara. Asher lo arasaut fasa v'shachavima, v'nimtzau, v'natana isha shokhevima, la viha ne'ara, ha-chamishim kosef, v'lo tiyad isha, takar asher ina, lo yuchol shachal kol yomav. So Rashi says the second ha-na'ara is extraneous, because it says in the beginning of the parasha, v'nimtza ish ne'ara bitula. Then v'natan la'vi ha-na'ara, you could have just run v'natan la'viha. The ha-na'ara is not necessary. So Rashi says the drasha is the first nara, which is the gufei, we'll see, which is for the parasha itself to teach us you need a nara. And then the ha nara is extraneous in two ways. One is it's nara, and then it uses the hey ayidia, ha nara. So those are the two extra points that are made here according to Rashi. The Rabbeinu Chananel disagrees. The Rabbeinu Chananel says that the extraneous version over here, and you have to have a different girsa in the Gemara. That's why Tosafot rejects the Rabbeinu Chananel because of the girsa in the Gemara, is nar, nara, ha nara. And that is that in Parshat Ki Teitze, the Na'ara is written Chaser. It's written without a hey at the end. So you could pronounce it, if you just read it, you would pronounce it as Na'ar instead of Na'ara. So the extraneous is that it could have written Na'ara with a hey, instead it wrote Na'ar. So now, these are the limudim. Na'ar versus Na'ara with a hey. Then there's Na'ara with a hey, which is also extraneous. And then Ha-Ni'ara with a hey ayidiyah that gives you three levels of extra writing over here, nar, nara, ha neara. That's Rabbeinu Chananel's version. Again, Tosafot rejects it because that's not what it says in our Gemaras. That's not the girsa. Obviously, the Rabbeinu Chananel had a dip in girsa. And then in addition to that, he says, "V'nir Rabbeinu Tam de lo ktiv nara malei behei elohau de motzi shemra." The nara is only written with a hey in the case of motzi shemra. In all of these cases, in the case of anusa, it's written without a hey already. It's written nara. So you can't claim that you could have written it as nar, because the Torah does write it as nar. So you can't say, oh, it wrote ha-ne'ara, and it should have written nara, or it should have written nar, or it should have written nothing. So those are the three levels. But the truth is that that doesn't write na'ara over here in Malay. It writes it chaser. So one of those levels of limudim already gone. The question of what the Rabbeinu Chananel thought, that he would think of it because of the pronunciation was ha-na'ara, and therefore nar is a limud, or does Rabbeinu Chananel have a different in Chumash? His Chumash maybe had it written with Malay hey, and we do find some discrepancies like that amongst the Rishonim, where they have slightly different versions of the Torah. You could argue that based on the pronunciation of ha-na'ara, that there are those three levels of extra. So there you have three words. Chadu gufei, again, want to teach you that it is a na'ara here. Chadu tuye chayive lavin. So that one of them is to teach you that even when there's a chiyuv lav, nevertheless, we do say there is a knas, when there's a chiyuv lav involved in the marriage. And one is to teach you that even when there are chiyuv karet in the marriage, there still is a knas that's involved over here. You could ask the very simple question, which is, let the Torah leave out below tiyeh le'isha, and then you wouldn't need a ribui to teach you that chayiv lavin and chayiv karetot are included. The fact that you have a miut now demands a ribui for these items, but then the Gemara is going to say that that's because lo tiyeh le'isha, that drosha is needed. V'yesh lomar di'isuk l'midrash lo tiyeh le'isha midata, that she has to be a willing participant. Lo tiyeh le'isha also teaches us that if the woman refuses to marry him, they don't force her to marry him, even though that's the command in the Torah, lo tiyeh le'isha, it still has to be with her acquiescence. And therefore we need the drosha of lo tiyeh le'isha for another drosha, and that's why the Torah had to write it, and not say that, oh, here's a miyot and a riboy, just leave it out completely. Rav Papa Amar, bitula, bitulot, ha bitulot. Chad gufei, v'chad liutuye chayve lavin, v'chad liutuye chayve kretot. So Rav Papa does the same thing, he just does it with the case of Mifateh. In the case of Mifateh, you also have an extraneous word of Betulah. It says, V'chi Yifateh Ish Betulah, Asher Lo Orasa V'shechav Imah. Mahor Yimharenu Lo Lisha. Then, V'imayin Yemein Aviyah Letita Lo, Kesef Yishcho Kemor HaBetulot. So over there, you could have just written Kemohar. HaBetulot is obvious because she was a Betulah. So the word HaBetulot, again, here, according to Rashi, is extraneous. It could have written nothing. Instead, it wrote HaBetulot. It two pieces that are extraneous over here. Bitulah and HaBetulah. The Hei Yediyas, you get two Limudim. Again, the Rabbeinu Chananel says it's all embedded in this word because it could have written Bitulah instead of Bitulot. So there are actually three Limudim over here. It's Bitulah, it's a Bitulot, and then Bitulot, HaBetulot. So there are three levels of extra that is over here. Although Tosafot says that he, again, doesn't agree that this is the right way to read it, because then you have an extra Betulah in the Pasuk, according to him, because then you don't need Chad Gufay, because you have the word Betulah that's found before in the Pasuk, and then you wouldn't need Betulah at all. So he disagrees with the Beinu Hanano that the whole Limud is from this one word, and not including the first Betulah that we had. According to Rashi, in both instances, the word Betulah and the word Na'ara, the first time they are mentioned, is the Gufay. Then the next Limud has two extra parts to it, and that's what gives you two additional Limudim. In the cases of the Rabbeinu Chananel, in each case, the last word has three limudim embedded in it, and the first word, we don't mention it at all. That's the gufei. But if that's the gufei, then why do you need another the gufei? And that's why Tosafot rejects the explanation of the Rabbeinu Chananel. But the Rapapa says the same thing with regards to bitulah, bitulot, ha bitulot, chad gufei, v'chad yutuye, chayve lavin, v'chad yutuye, chayve kretot. Rapapa, l'may time alomar kresh lakish. Why doesn't Rapapa learn like kresh lakish? How me bailek the baye? He needs that limud of Ne'ara for Abai's limud of Damar Abai Bala Meta Pator. If he had Biah with her, he rapes her, and then she dies, he does not have to pay. Shnemar, Benatan la via Ne'ara. That you give the monies to the father of the Ne'ara. La via Ne'ara, Velo la via Meta. To the father of the Ne'ara, who's still extant, who's still here, and not to the father of the woman who died. So he does not pay the Knas in an instance where the girl passed away between the time that he raped her, and he is brought to din over the issue. The knas is not paid in that instance. So that's the limud of Abai. He needs the word Na'ara there, and that takes away one of the limudim. Reish Lakish, my time, alo amar k'Rav Papa. Why doesn't Reish Lakish subscribe to Rav Papa's position? How we violate the Gzeira Shova? Because he needs that for the Gzeira Shova. This is what I mentioned when we started the daf today. That, Tatanya, kesef yishkol k'mor abitulot. Jizeh k'mor abitulot. Umor abitulot k'zeh. Kesef Yishkol Gemor Abitulot teaches you that there's a Gzeira Shova between this and the Parsha in Kiteitze. So just like in Parsha Kiteitze, it says Chamishim Kesef, and over here it says Kesef Yishkol. So we have a Gzeira Shova to teach you that Kesef and Shekel go to both parties. 50 from the case of Anusa and the Shekel from the case of Mifuta. That Gzeira Shova tells us how much is paid by both cases. But there's Gzeira Shova between the two of them, and I need the word Betulah for that Gezerah Shava. So now the Gemara says, Reish Lakish, Nami Bailek the Abaye. Doesn't Reish Lakish have to also need the Limud of Abaye? That is for the Aviyah Naran, not the Aviyah Meita. And Rav Papa Nami be Bailek the Gezerah Shava. And doesn't Rav Papa also need the word Betulah for Gezerah Shava? Ela Shite Krai Ketive. So what the Gemara now says is that Reish Lakish and Rav Papa are not mutually exclusive, but rather, they're a single opinion. They're just bringing the limud from the different sides. But they're really one big limud, which is that we have six extraneous limudim over here. Shrei l'gufayu. Two of them are for the psukim themselves. One to teach you betulah, one to teach you na'ara. Chadik le'abaye. One of the limudim, the na'ara, is used for Abaye's limud, which is avia na'ara, but not avia meita. Chadik zereshava. One of the betulot is used for the zereshava. Aitrulei trei. So you have two additional. One by Betulah, one by Ne'ara, which are extra. Chade etuye chayve lavin, vechade etuye chayve kretot. One to include chayve lavin, and one to include chayve kretot. And what does that exclude? That's the next part of the Gemara. Tosafot does ask over here, why don't we just say that one is to exclude chayve lavin, and one is to exclude chayve asei? Why does the Gemara say, oh, one of them is for lavin, one of them is for kretot? I could have argued that one of them comes to say that chiyuvei lavin pay knas. One of them comes to say that chiyuvei asei pay a knas. So why is it that the Gemara divides it between lavin and kretot? So Tosafot says the reason is because the answer is velo tielo isha is a statement about whether it means isha ruya, someone that he could keep, or whether kedushin are tofsin, or whether kedushin actually take effect. And the truth is that by Lavin and Asay, they're in the same category. Lavin and Asay have kedushin tofsin. Kedushin work by chiyuve Lavin and chiyuve Asay, by a marriage that's illegal because of a Lavin and Asay. But you're not allowed to be mikayim the woman. You can't keep the woman as a wife because it's inappropriate. Chayuve kreto to have a different level of problem, which is not only can you not keep the woman, you don't even have kedushin tofsin. So as far as lav and asay are concerned in here, they're a single category. They have the same din. Even though one's a lav, one's an asay, their issue is simply you're not allowed to keep the woman, but kedushin or tofsin. So you can't separate them as a category because categorically looking at this issue of lo tiyada yisha, they have the same character traits, which is kedushin or tofsin, but you're not allowed to be mikayim the woman. On the other hand, the case of kreitot involves a different dynamic totally, which is that kedushin are not tofsin. And that's why Tosafot says the Gemara divides it up. Chiyuvei lavin is the same thing as chiyuvei asay. They're synonymous over here. And that's why the Gemara looked for a second limud, which is chiyuvei kreitot, that are included in this case as well. Now the Gemara says, fuke mehai tano. And it comes to this tano, tanya. Below tiyada yisho, shimon etemani omer isha sheyesh ba havaya. It has to be a woman which kedushin are tofsin with. Rabbi Shimon ben Asi omer isha ruya lekaima. It has to be a woman that you can maintain. My benayu. What's the difference between them? Mamzeret vitnitina ika benayu. Mamzeret and nitina are the differential in their opinion. Damar nambara yesh bahavaya, hanami yesh bahavaya. But in the case of mamzeret and nitina, you do have the ability to generate kiddushin with them, and therefore they do have havaya. Damar damar ruya lekaima, that you're allowed to maintain them as a wife. Ha ina ruya lekaima. He's not allowed to stay married to these individuals. So according to Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh and Shimon HaTeimani, they clearly do not agree with the limud that we just brought from Reish Lakish and Rav Papa. Because according to Reish Lakish and Rav Papa, and this is the explanation of our Mishnah, Chayevei Kritot do or do have a Knas associated with them. So now here you have Shimon HaTeimani and Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh both saying that in the case where either Kedushin are not Tovsin, or you're not allowed to be Mikayim the Isha, you will not get a knas. So both of those do not work in our Mishnah, because in our Mishnah, you're granting a knas to women who kedushin are not tofsin, chiyuve kreitot, and we also are granting a knas to women who you cannot be mikayim. So clearly, they are not the authors of our Mishnah. The drasha of Rav Papa and Reish Lakish comes to exclude these opinions, that of Shimon HaTeimani and Rav Shimon ben Manasseh. Now, when the Gemara continues over here, and says, according to Rabbi Akiva, who says by chiyuve lavin, kedushin are also not tofsin, right? Then, what is left over? What's left for a kanas over here? The Gemara is about to ask that. The point here, Rashi makes this point, and Tosafot makes this point, that they're only asking on Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh. Shimon ben Manasseh is a later Tana, we want him to accord, or his explanation to fit the shita of Rabbi Akiva. On the other hand, with regards to Shimon HaTeimani, we know he disagrees with Rabbi Akiva. So he doesn't have to explain himself within the position of Rabbi Akiva, because Shimon HaTeimani argues on Rabbi Akiva about what the qualification for a mamzer is. Because over there it says, Kol she'er basar shu below yavo divrei Rabbi Akiva. Akiva says a mamzer is created for any chiyuv lav. And Shimon HaTeimani, Kol she'chayivin lav karet bidei shamayim. And Rabbi Shimon HaTeimani says that only karet is a generator of a mamzer. So he clearly disagrees with Rabbi Akiva, and we don't have to explain Shimon HaTeimani in the position of Rabbi Akiva, because guess what? He doesn't hold like Rabbi Akiva. The other hand, Rabbi Shimon ben Asi is a later Tana, him we want to explain within the position of Rabbi Akiva, and that leads to the next question of the Gemara, which is that they can exclude Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says that, b'chiyuvei lavin, there's also no kedushin tofsin, then Shimon HaTeimani is coming to exclude Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, according to him, dushinar tofsin b'chiyuvei lavin, and that's who will get a kanas, according to Shimon HaTeimani. But according to Rabbi Shimon ben Asiyah, where there's isha ruya lekaima, women that you're allowed to keep, that is who gets a knas. Isha she'ena ruya lekaima does not get a knas. Then in Rabbi Kiva's position, damar ein kedushin tofsin b'chay v'lavin, my benayu. If there's no kedushin tofsin b'chay v'lavin, then what's the difference between them? Because then according to both Shimon HaTeimani and Rabbi Shimon ben Asiyah, you would not be able to keep them. Ika b'inayu, almana lekohen gadol. Almana lekohen gadol is an isra lav, but it's an Isra Lav that has an exception. That will be the difference between them. According to Shimon HaTeimani, who focuses on Havaya, over there, there is Kedushin Tovsin. According to Rabbi Shimon ben Asi, who focuses on Ruhi Lekaima, you cannot keep it. Amanah cannot stay married to a Kohen Gadol. And therefore, that would be the difference between them. Ki Rabbi Simai. That is similar to the position of Rabbi Simai. And this is a machloket we saw in the Gemara in Yevamot, in the position of Rabbi Akiva, which are the Tanaim argue within the position of Rabbi Akiva, how far does Rabbi Akiva's position go? The Tanya, Rabbi Simai, Omer, Minakolo, say Rabbi Akiva Mamzerim, Chutz Me'amanah Kohen Gadol. So he says, everything Rabbi Akiva makes into Mamzer, with the exception of Amanah Kohen Gadol. Shemrei Torah, lo yikach, velo yichalel. Because it says over there, by Amanah Kohen Gadol, you may not marry her. And if you do marry her, we'll be michalel. Because if you don't marry her, lo yichalel, then you will not profane. But if you do marry her, will profane. Chilulim hu osev ein osev mamzerim. It only creates chalalim. The marriage to this woman will produce chalalim, but not produce mamzerim. Olo Rabbi Yeshvav, damar bo v'natzua chalakiva ben Yosef, she'amer kosheinu biyab Yisrael of lad mamzer, mambinayu. Then in the case that Rabbi Yeshvav says that, according to Rabbi Akiva, that anybody who is restricted as a marriage or biyah makes a mamzer, then what is the difference here between the position of Rabbi Shimon HaTaimani and Rabbi Shimon Ben Asya? According to Rabbi Shimon Ben Asya, Isha Ruyala Kaima, there is no Isha Ruyala Kaima. All these people you have to divorce. But now according to Shimon HaTaimani in Rabbi Akiva's position, then also over here, Amanah Kohen Gadol is also restricted and is a mamzer, according to Rabbi Yeshvav. So Yikbenayu, Chayavei Asay. Yeah, the difference between them is Chayuvei Asay. Mitzri Vadomi. The case of a Mitzri and Adomi, which says that Dor Shlishi Yavo, that the third generation allowed to enter Klal Yisrael, implying that the first generation, they're not allowed to enter into Klal Yisrael. That's an Isra Asay. So Nichol Rabbi Yeshvav, that makes sense. Ilafuke Mitaimo de Rabbi Simai Kaate Shapir. Ella, the time of the Nafshe Kamar. According to Rabbi Yeshvav, if he's coming to exclude or to differentiate himself from the position of Rabbi Simai, then it makes sense. Because then he's just saying, listen, you're wrong about Amanah Kohen Gadol. You're not wrong in general, but you're just wrong about Amanah Kohen Gadol. Chiyuvei Lavin do create a mamzer, even by the case of Amanah Kohen Gadol. On the other hand, if time of the Nafshe Kamar, if he's now creating an independent opinion, he's not disagreeing directly with Rabbi Simai, but saying this is the explanation of Rabbi Akiva, then Kol Shein Lo Biyab Yisrael of Vlad Mamzer Vafilu Chayavei Asay. If we understand Rabbi Yeshvav to be saying that even Chayuvei Asay according to Rabbi Akiva will produce a Mamzer, then what's the difference between Shimon HaTaimani and Rabbi Shimon Ben Asya? Ma Benayu. Ikin Benayu Bula the Kohen Gadol. The difference between them is if a Kohen Gadol marries a Bi'ula. Umayishna, what's the difference over there between a Kohen Gadol to a Bi'ula? That's an Yisra'asei. He's supposed to marry a Bitula. If he marries a Bilula, it's an Yisra'asei. That's no different than Mitzri and Adomi. And we already said, Rabbi Yeshvav says that Rabbi Akiva believes that that is a Mamzer. So why is this different? Because, Tavlei Asei Shenu Shaveh Bakol. It's an Asei that does not apply to everyone. It's an Asei that only applies to Kohanim, but it's only an Asei that applies to the Kohen Gadol himself. And because of that, Rabbi Akiva would agree over there that that does not produce a mamzer, and that will be the difference between them, because over there it'll be a isha she'ena ru'uya, meaning she shouldn't be keeping her. On the other hand, it is a tsrasei that does not produce a mamzer, and therefore kedushin would be tovsin. As Tosfot points out over here, and he tries to reconcile this throughout Shas, there is an easy correlation. Mamzer equals no kedushin tovsin, no kedushin tovsin equals mamzer. That the two are synonymous. If you produce a mamzer, then kedushin are not tovsim. If you don't produce a mamzer, then there are kedushin tovsim, and the other way around too. If kedushin are tovsim, you don't produce a mamzer. So here, we would say that kedushin are tovsim, and that would be the difference between them. Even though we saw Rishonim and Yevamot to say that once the Kohen Gadol marries the Bi'ula, then for him to maintain her afterwards, there's no difference. Every woman that the Kohen Gadol marries is a Bi'ula, and then becomes a Bi'ula after the first Bi'ah. So afterwards, there's no reason for him to divorce the woman afterwards, because once he's married her, and she is a Bula, how is that different than a case of marrying a Bitula, and then she turns into Bula after he has Bia with her the first time? Tosfot raises the issue, Bidiavad, the Kohen Gadol can stay married to this woman, but since Lechatchila, he shouldn't marry her, that is enough to classify it as being a case of Lo Ru'uya L'Kaima, that he's not supposed to keep her. So it's not so clear that there's an Isser L'Kaima over here, but the Gemara assumes that that is the case. Now, the question is, how do you have a Bi'ula who gets a Knas? Knas is only paid to a Bi'ula. So how is it here possible that the Kohen Gadol is marrying a Bi'ula, and she's still entitled to a Knas? By definition, if she's a Bi'ula, she's not a Bi'ula, she's not entitled to Knas. The cases are basically mutually exclusive. Rashi says the case here is, Bi'ula Shalokidarka. She's considered a bi'ula when it's a bi'ula shelo kedarka. So therefore, she still has her bitulim, although she's not defined as a bitula. And even though that is a machloket tanaim in the Gemara in Yevamot, as to whether she's classified as a bi'ula or not, nevertheless, over here we're saying, fine, that works according to one of the deot, at least it works that she is classified as a bitula and a bi'ula. She's a bitula legabei knas. She's a bi'ula for the Kohen Gadol. Now, there are other explanations over here that explain the case of bitula, not like Rav Rashi suggests over here, that it's a case where she's bula shelo kedarka, but a case where the Kohen Gadol himself was the one who raped her. He has to pay a knas, because technically he was the one who removed her bitulim. On the other hand, for Loti Elisha, for him to maintain her as a wife, after this he can't marry her because she is a bi'ula. And so that's the case here. The case here is where the Kohen Gadol himself is the perpetrator, and therefore the problem with bitulim was created by him. But now he has to maintain her and keep her. He can't keep her because she is already a bi'ula. And that would be the case over here where you can have the case where the knas is relevant, even though he may not maintain her as a wife afterwards, because she is already a bi'ula. Stop here, six lines down on the top of Lamed Amud Aleph.